how we can pray for Kevin and his ministry there in South Africa as his one of his supporting churches. I've got a few pictures that Beth's going to put up there for me, I think. All right, great. This is Pastor Nicholas. He's a South African pastor. I had a chance to talk to him quite a bit, as many mentioned, when we stayed at his house overnight. And I asked him one thing. I said, Pastor Nicholas, how can we pray for the South African churches? What does the South African church need? And this is something that Kevin said to me, too. They need men. The pastors of South Africa have been very aggressive in evangelizing, but not as aggressive in discipling. And if Kevin probably has something that he would want you to pray for, it's the discipleship of men. It's helping these pastors learn how to disciple as well. This is a big weakness, because many of the people who come to church are women. At Pastor Nicholas's church, maybe one or two men, he said, will be there on a Sunday. Whereas Kevin actually has his services in the evening so that the men will come. But still, even still, maybe 4-5 men at the most out of, you know, the 20 people that are there. And so they really need to strengthen men. And I think if there's a prayer request, an urgent prayer request for the church in South Africa and for Kevin's ministry, it's the discipleship of men. That they would have wisdom in how to do that, that they would know how they can do that as well. I also want to talk about the AIDS orphans a little bit. This is a little bit of a misnomer. Jeremy mentioned this. It seems like, you know, people are talking about all the orphans that have been caused by AIDS. And there are many, many, many orphans that have been caused by AIDS. Like 3 million, I think they say, in South Africa alone. Maybe 47 million or something throughout the whole continent of Africa. One thing that we picture in the U.S., we're picturing little kids sleeping on the streets, running around, no parents, no guardians, nothing. And yet, the families and the children, or the families are taking care of them. The communities are taking care of them. They're a very community-oriented society and culture. And so the societies, the communities are taking care of the children, are helping them, at least with their physical needs. And so the ministry that Kevin wants to have is empowering churches to reach these people and to train the people who are watching the kids now, not to take the kids away from them and put, part of the reason why he left Bethesda, not to take them and put them in an orphanage that's Americanized and run the way America would run it with all these American dollars flowing in, but rather to establish through the churches orphanages that and even homes where people are trained to raise their children in a godly way. And then these AIDS babies can be raised in Christian homes and can be raised in godliness if we can train the people that are raising them. We don't have to take the kids away from them and tell them, sorry, you don't know what you're doing, but instead to train those people and to help them see, and help them get a biblical worldview, help them to learn. One of the places we visited, you saw it in the video, Joanna's AIDS babies, Liz mentioned it in her testimony. This place is doing that. This is a lady who is just a South African lady who's just taking babies into her home. And she's actually taking the sick ones. These are the ones that nobody really wants. I mean, nobody's really taking care of the AIDS babies. In fact, even Bethesda was supposed to have an AIDS babies place. They canceled that, nixed it from the plans. And that's, no one wants to adopt these babies. They probably only are going to live for 2 or 3 years at most. And so they're not really adoptable. There's not really, and so that's one need, just ministering to these infants, as well as just training them. And Kevin sees more the way of doing that is through local churches and through people in local churches who have a heart for this. And actually, Joanna is going to have to leave her home that she's at, and Kevin is trying to figure out some way to help her. There's a plot of land near where Pastor Nicholas lives that he actually owns. I was talking, Kevin's goal, his dream, is to possibly build something there for Joanna to have AIDS babies, have more than six, and be able to help with young people and maybe even help a church get started in this community. Probably about $10,000 is what it would take to build that, which, I mean, for us, you know, building a home and all this, I mean, it wouldn't have to be built by American standards. It just needs to be built. They need less to build their homes because there's less insulation, things like that. This is something that maybe our church should consider praying about being involved in and ministering to. I also want to talk about the refugees. There was actually a question in Sunday school about the refugees. This is Solomon. He's a refugee that's staying at the Zacks property. He has an amazing story. Left Ethiopia 13 or 15 years ago, and traveled to South Africa, spent 2 months actually walking from Kenya to South Africa. This man can't get papers in South Africa at all. He can't find work because of that. And his situation is pretty desperate. And our goal actually as a group is to sponsor him as a refugee. And maybe if you want to be involved in something like this, I think this is another ministry our church can consider praying about. Kevin is concerned about the refugees in South Africa. Basically, as Jeremy mentioned, they're coming in from other countries. They're finding work in South Africa, and that's making the South Africans mad because they feel like they're getting ripped off. The South African black people. They felt like when apartheid ended, that everything was supposed to be great and wonderful. And things are getting better in South Africa, by the way. It is poor, and it's a lot of poverty is left over from apartheid, but it's getting better. People are being able to build homes that weren't able to build homes before. If you go around, you see these sheet metal shacks, but you see stacks and stacks of blocks because they're buying blocks to save up to build themselves a brick home. And things are getting better for some of the South Africans, but some of them are still not being able to find work. And so what they're doing is they're attacking the foreigners, other black people that are taking, that they feel like are stealing their jobs, or are just successful. One guy just had a shop. He set up a shop. He was an entrepreneur. He came to South Africa in a little township. He set up a shop. He was doing very well. He showed us a newspaper. This is what Tony was talking about. He showed us a newspaper article. He was on the front page walking out of his burned shop because of the xenophobia. And some of these people are going to have to be resettled. Some of them will stay in South Africa, and Kevin thinks it's best that some of them stay in South Africa. Some of them are going to need to be resettled. And refugee resettlement is a ministry that many denominations have across the United States. The Lutherans and Catholics especially are heading up many resettlement operations from all over the world. I think our church should maybe consider possibly having this as a ministry. What my goal would be in it is that we would have opportunity to minister to the people if they come. We would like to get Solomon to the States. We would need to pay for his airfare, basically, and maybe some other expenses. And then the goal of resettlement is for them to pay us back. But if we can get him here, my goal would be to settle him in Fond du Lac and for us as a community and a church to gather around him and to support him and to be a community to him here in the States and to help him and really disciple him. I believe he's a Christian. I believe that he has a heart to do right, and I was encouraging him along those lines. But I think that this is a need that maybe we should consider as a church as well. And then just an update on the Zacks and a way we can pray for them specifically. With all of the refugee situation, it's easy to focus on all of the social need that's there. There's so much need with the refugees. I mean, they've been run out of their homes, and now they're in a refugee camp. You know, government, military tents. You know, maybe I think the rows were maybe, there were maybe 30 huge government military tents that were set up that these men and women and families were staying in. And it's easy to think, oh, we need to give them stuff and do stuff for them. And Kevin has a heart for that. He has a heart for the social need of these people. And there is a great need. And it's good for us and for him to be involved in this. I think we just need to pray that you know, through that the gospel remains forefront in Kevin's ministry and that he's able to minister in that way. And more, not just in the social end, but also in preaching the gospel and reaching these people. And he has a great heart. He's greatly enthusiastic about the ministry there in South Africa. And I think our money is well spent in sending it to Kevin and supporting them in South Africa. He is at 85% supported right now. Part of that is because of changes in the dollar. Part of it is because of just lost support. And so they're very close to fully supported. He says sometimes they have good months, sometimes they have bad months. It just kind of varies. But he said they're doing okay, but they are at 85%, so something for us to think about in that regard as well. I want to try to go very quickly here. I want to talk about Joshua chapter 1 and how this passage and what happened in South Africa has affected my life specifically. Moses is dead. That's the way that Joshua starts off. Joshua chapter 1 says, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord came to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, came to talk to him. And, you know, Joshua was like second in command. He was assisting Moses in the different things that were going on. But Joshua had a problem. And I think we can see that in this passage, what his problem is. It's not very hard to figure out what the problem was with Joshua. Three times here, God says, be strong and courageous. I think Joshua was a little afraid. And let me tell you, I don't blame him for being afraid. When Pastor had his heart attack last November, I was afraid. And I know many of us were afraid. When the leadership is gone, when there's a threat to the leadership, I think it's easy for us to be afraid. And because sometimes we gain some sort of security from the leadership that's there. And I think that Joshua had formed some of his security in who Moses was and in the leadership gifts that God had given Moses. And it was easy for him to be afraid because now Moses was dead. And God said, hey, Joshua. And I don't think it was just Joshua either, or God either. I think it was the people. I think the people came to Joshua and said, okay, Joshua, what are we supposed to do now? And I think Joshua was like, well, I always asked Moses what we were supposed to do now when you guys asked me that question. I don't know what I'm supposed to do necessarily right now. And God comes to Joshua and gives him these words of encouragement, because I think that just like Joshua, and I think we can apply these things to our lives, because just like Joshua, we face this fear. I mentioned that. I face fear when Pastor had his heart attack. I faced fear on this trip. I think I faced fear even preparing for this trip as the leader of this group and kind of the coordinator of what we were doing and how we were doing it. I faced fear. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what was going to happen on this trip. I think Kevin kind of took our expectations and threw them out the window. I didn't know what was going to happen on this trip. And there was a lot of things I hadn't done before, like travel internationally in an airplane. And obviously... visit a refugee camp or sleep on the streets, and that can make you a little nervous and fearful at times. And we face things even here. You don't have to travel to South Africa to be afraid. We face fear even here. So just like Joshua, we're fearful sometimes. But I think we have to find courage. Just like God says, be strong and courageous to Joshua, we need to find courage too. We need to be strong and courageous. We got to find courage somehow to face times of fear. And I think this passage gives us three facts concerning finding courage. So the first one I want you to see, notice what God does when he talks to Joshua. He says, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now arise and go into the land and take possession of it. I'm giving you all of it, just like I promised your fathers, just like I told you guys you're going to have this much land from this river to this to the Mediterranean Sea. You're going to have from the wilderness of Lebanon down to basically the Sinai Peninsula. This is all going to be yours, just like I promised your fathers. And you know what he did? He basically repeated the promises that he had made to the people of Israel through the years. And when we remember the promises of God, we can have courage. I believe we have courage when we are remembering the promises of God. There are many promises in the Word of God for us to remember. One that I can think of in particular that helps me often is in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 8 and 9. Paul is telling about his experience with his thorn in the flesh, and he says that I prayed to God three times to take it away, and God said, you know, no, I'm not going to take it away. I want you to know that my grace is sufficient for you. You know, God's grace is sufficient. God's strength can carry us through. And when we were going, I got a picture up here of us at Malas, which is one of the refugee camps. It's housed in a tire, it was an old tire warehouse, is where they put these refugees. And these guys are kind of forgotten by the government. They don't have it nearly as nice as the ones in the tents. But they've made do, and they've made their place nice without the government's help. But when we went to these refugee camps, let me tell you something, I was afraid. I mean, Kevin was talking about how these men in one of the refugee camps had chased people away, threatening to burn them because they had gone to the government refugee camp. There were some that were picketing the government because they didn't think the government had responded right, and they didn't want the government's help because of that, and they were kind of off on their own little side. And that was scary. We didn't know what to expect. But we had to go in believing, trusting that Kevin knew what he was talking about, and believing that God would protect us, believing that God was in control of the situation. And trusting that his grace would be sufficient for us, that we would know what we needed to say if we needed to say something, which most of us just kind of listened And that was pretty much the best thing we could do, was just listen to them. You see, God's grace was sufficient. When we remember the promises of God, when we're remembering those promises, that gives us courage. Because we remember that God is in control. We remember that God has a plan. We remember that God is doing something. And sometimes it's easy to be afraid, but we remember those promises that God has given us. And there are numerous, and another one he mentions here that I'm going to talk about a little later, is the fact that he is with us always, even to the end of the age. We don't have to fear because God is with us. Trust the promises of God. When you remember that God promised what he promised, you don't have to be afraid, and you can have courage to face whatever you're going to face. But secondly, look at what he tells Joshua to do later on. In verse 7, he says, "Only be strong and very courageous. Be careful to do according to all the law that Moses, my servant, commanded you." I think courage comes, secondly, when we are obeying the word of God. Hebrews 10, 26 and 27 tells us that when we are disobeying God, there is not rest in our lives, but a fearful expectation of judgment. When you're not obeying God, you ought to be in fear. You ought not be courageously facing your punishment, per se. You ought to be instead just obeying God. It's hard to be courageous if you're not obeying God. Do what the word of God tells you to do. Do what God tells you to do, and you will be strong. I think I have another picture up there. Beth, I gotta. I put the plane on here because I was thinking of the fear that I had a little bit of even leading the group, flying overseas. We get to the airport, and you know who's everybody looking to? Okay, Rory, where do we go? I don't know. I haven't done this before. And so, actually we ended up a little messed up at O'Hare because of maybe partially my inexperience, partially I think it was the United Workers' ignorance. But nonetheless, we got a little messed up at O'Hare. And we're sitting there, and it's like 20 minutes till our flight. We're still trying to get all of our baggage checked. Most of everybody had been through at that time. 20 minutes till our flight, but though we still had a few people who were getting their luggage checked to get on the airplane. And, again, easy to be afraid, easy to fear. But, just remembering that, I had to remember that, this is what God has called me to do. I'm obeying God in leading this group. I'm obeying God in doing what he has called me to do here. And when we're obeying God, I think it's much easier for us to be courageous, much easier for us to be doing what we ought to be doing, and not to shrink back, but to be able to go forward. And we made the flight. There was a storm in Chicago that day, actually lightning, and it actually delayed the flight just enough for us to even get our luggage on the flight. They were actually going to send our luggage on another plane to Washington, which made us a little nervous. Obviously, anytime luggage is involved in an airplane, you're worried about whether it's actually going to get to where it's supposed to get. But God was good in that, and allowed our luggage to get on the same plane we were on. I remember we were sitting on the plane as we'd just gotten on. We're all like rushing on, and everybody's looking at us like, "What are all these nuts?" Nine of us running onto the plane at the last minute, and then we're sitting down, and the pilot says we're delayed because of lightning. And Ben looks out his window after the people started moving around on the tarmac again. He's like, "Hey, I see our luggage. It's getting in the plane." And we're like, "Oh, yes." That was such a relief. And so obeying God, seeing God work when we're obeying God, when we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, it gives us courage that we don't have to be afraid of things going wrong and things not working out. Just obey God, do what you're supposed to do, let him work out the details, and you can be courageous when you face these things. And then the last thing, I think this is the most important point, because God says this every time he says, "Be strong and very courageous." He says, "I will be with you. I will not leave you or forsake you." Later on, "Do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." It's the most important point. Courage comes, first of all, because we're remembering the promises of God. Secondly, because we're obeying the word of God. And thirdly, because God is there. God is with you. And that means you're not facing it alone. You're not facing the difficulty by yourself. We didn't walk into that refugee camp by ourselves. We didn't sleep on the streets by ourselves. And Jeremy told the story of how Kevin just, he told us, I'm going to the bathroom, left, didn't come back for 20 minutes. And I'm like, hey, Ray, maybe we should go look for Kevin. Okay, we walk around to go look for Kevin. Nobody in this park, not a single person, except for one guy who was kind of wandering through. We asked, Solomon asked him if he'd seen Kevin. He said no. And we're like, oh, this isn't good. You know, I mean, and I was worried for Kevin. I was also worried for us because we were in downtown Pretoria, and the only person that I had that knew anything about downtown Pretoria at all was Solomon, a refugee from Ethiopia who's been in, you know, who doesn't even really go downtown Ethiopia because he's, or not, I mean, Pretoria, because he's afraid of being arrested because he's basically illegal. And, you know, I mean, I'm like, and we have the combi without the keys, you know, and it's locked there. And I'm like, well, I'm not exactly sure what to happen, but I did, but we said that. I said, guys, Kevin would say this is good for us. Let's go to sleep. I mean, I didn't know what else to do. I mean, I figured, you know, Kevin would probably eventually come back. And we're sleeping, and, you know, sleeping on the streets, you don't sleep that well. So, you know, I woke up about every hour. One time I woke up, and there's Kevin getting into his blanket. And I'm like, Kevin, where did you go? And he told us about how he went to go see where Central was, how far away it was, and he walked back. 2 hours later, you know, he comes back. And Reagan wakes up, and he's like, Kevin, hey, I was praying for you, man. And Kevin and Reagan, I felt like really kind of connected in some ways. They were kind of, you know, Reagan's personality is kind of Kevin's personality, I feel like. And Kevin's like, thanks, man, appreciate it. And I just, you know, I was thankful that, you know, we did search around a little bit. We wanted to make sure he was okay. I figured, but, you know, at some point when you've walked a 2-block radius and you've searched everywhere where Kevin could be, you didn't hear any screams, gunshots, or anything like that, you pretty much just assume, okay, Kevin knows what he's doing. He's either doing this on purpose because he's testing us or he hates us, one of the two. And, or, you know, something else is going on. I don't know. I figured he has this goal to get arrested. I don't know why. He actually wants to get arrested. He wants to be misunderstood and get arrested so he can spend a night in jail sometime and then, you know, have everything cleared up in the morning. And I'm like, oh yeah, that usually how it works, you know. Everything's just cleared up in the morning. Oh, it's just a big misunderstanding. Sorry. I'm like, maybe he got his goal. You know, maybe he got arrested. I didn't know what had happened, or maybe he had found a police officer and asked to spend a night in jail. I don't know. I didn't know what had happened, but, you know, I just had to rest in knowing, you know what, God is there. And I tried to go to sleep, and I actually did fall asleep. Solomon told us his story, a little bedtime story for me at least. I fell asleep during it. And then Kevin shows up, you know, and I just had to trust, you know, God's in control of this situation. God is there in the middle of this. And I don't need to worry. You know, in the morning, we'll figure out what to do. If Kevin's not here in the morning, I'm not going to stay up all night waiting for him to come back in case he doesn't, because then I'm going to really be exhausted. I was already planning on being exhausted sleeping on concrete. And, you know, we'll worry about it in the morning. I was kind of formulating a plan in my mind a little bit, but I was just like, you know, I just got to trust God. God is in control here. And there's nothing I can do. At some point, it's out of my hands. I looked for him. I couldn't find him. All right, let's go sleep. And some of us slept better than others, but you know, we slept. So, you know, we face all of these things. And I'm in South Africa, you know, that's where fear sits, right? South Africa, you know, you're away from your comfort zone, you're away from all of the security of everything, so it's easier to identify the fear maybe. But I'm telling you, we have fear even today. And I have a picture up here. I Googled random American. And that was one of the pictures that popped. It was like the second picture. Random Americans, right there. And you know, this is another fear for me. Random Americans who maybe walk into Trinity Baptist Church. And, you know, while we were there, the thing that struck me the most was, you know, we'd go to these refugee camps, we'd go to Pastor Nicholas's house, and you know what we'd do? We'd spend time just talking to them. And we'd ask them what had happened to them. We'd ask them their story. And they would tell us. I mean, they're glad to tell us their story. In fact, when we were at one of the refugee camps, all they wanted to do was tell us their story. I had like three guys telling me their story at the same time. And that is what they wanted us to hear their stories, because they want us to help them, obviously. But you know what? There are 140 people in this room right now, and every one of them has a story. But you know, sometimes I'm not as anxious to go find out the story of the person that I don't know, because I'm afraid. It's just like walking into a refugee camp in South Africa. What are they going to think about me? What if they, you know, what if they never come back because they don't like me? Or, you know, it becomes about me, of course, instead of about what it's supposed to be about God and serving other people. And I become so self-centered that I become fearful even to do ministry here. And the thing is that I had to realize was that this doesn't just have to happen in South Africa. I don't just have to listen to stories in South Africa. I don't just get to know people in South Africa. I don't have to be in South Africa to minister. There are needs everywhere in the world, and we are surrounded by need. And I can't be afraid to meet the need. I need to be strong and courageous and step out, because I know that God has promised something, because he's called me to do something, to be like Christ, who humbled himself and became like man. And because he's there and he's with me. And he wants to help me meet needs here in Fond du Lac. That is the thing that probably struck me the most. I don't know how it... You know, why do I have to go to South Africa to get that? Like, there's need in Fond du Lac. I had to go to South Africa to find that out. I'm dense, I guess. Maybe a little slow. But this is what God did in my heart. He helped me realize that, you know what? I need to get over my fear here, too. Not just in South Africa. Not just when I'm walking into a refugee camp, but when I'm walking into church on Sunday morning. Not be afraid of the visitor that I don't know. Not be afraid, you know, we're about to start a singles ministry here. And you know what? I'm hoping that we have opportunity to minister to lots and lots of 20 to 30-year-old young people and disciple them and see them raised up into a godly generation that will lead the church into the next century, or into the middle of this century. But I'm going to tell you what, I'm going to have to overcome some things in my own fear. I'm going to have to be strong and courageous to do that, because I'm telling you what, it's not where I like to be all the time. It's just talking to people and walking up to people I don't know, and sometimes especially ministering to people who are, you know, way hipper than I am and way more culturally suave than I am. This is not my comfort zone. And you know what I hear God echoing in my ears as I think about that? The words that he said to Joshua. Be strong and very courageous, because I am with you. And he needs to be with every one of us. Because you know what? God maybe hasn't called you to do what he's called me to do, but he's called you to do something. If you are a child of God, he's called you to do something. Are you going to shrink back in fear, or are you going to be strong and courageous and take the bull by the horns and go get it? God has called us to accomplish something, and we can't let the need, the random American that we meet every day, we can't let that pass us by. We can't let the opportunities pass us by because we're afraid. We must be strong and courageous. And so, Trinity Baptist Church, let's go forward into this. We just started a fiscal year, into the months and years to come, strong and courageous, because we know that our God is with us.